2-2 to Guerrero.
And now Guerrero gets hit, and he is upset. A 96-mile-an-hour fastball. John Schneider is out of the dugout immediately. It is the second time that Guerrero has been hit in as many games. Well, some news. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is out of this game. Remember the hit by pitch. Hopefully it is nothing too serious.
Now hit by a pitch is Jose Ramirez by Kevin Gausman. Absolutely, that's retaliation right there. And he's hurt. Clearly, the Blue Jays, with Guerrero leaving the game, being hit twice in the series, took aim at the Guardians' best hitter, no matter what they say after the game. Jose Ramirez being pulled from the game.
Kevin Gausman has been absolutely dealing today for the Blue Jays. Good splitter, swing and a miss, strikeout number 6.
Pretty good day to be efficient on the mound, that is for sure.
And 8 outstanding innings for Kevin Gausman. Kevin Gausman gets a well-deserved high five from all of his buddies. Here on the road, the Blue Jays pick up a series victory and move back to 6 games over 500.
I thought best fastball of the year, to be honest with you. Consistent throughout, and split got better as the day went on. Exactly what we needed. You know, that was kind of vintage Kev. I mean, I know they're not trying to throw at Vlad. You know, we're not trying to throw at Hosey. You know, just kind of one of those things where you try to make a pitch, and I thought everyone handled it fine.
That was vintage, old school baseball, and I know a couple of fellas left the game injured, and that's not great, but I gotta say, and we don't have Damian Cox on today. Maybe he would disagree. I did love that.
You're a red blooded man. You love that. It'd be weird to love fighting in hockey, but like that'd be like a couple guys getting hit in the hands and or rib is too precious for you. I don't know if like I'll say Damian Cox now. If we say his name once more, will he just appear? I don't know. But no, I had no issue with it at all. And in fact, the opposite of an issue. I loved it. Yeah, there's something about baseball, the old school of it all. I mean, old school of every sport. We don't need it all the time, but we need it to exist, the possibility of it all the time. And I loved it. I loved it as well. And the only thing I might have loved more is, like, the nerve of John Schneider. It's like, I know. It's like, I think everyone handled it well, including Jose Ramirez, who stood there and took it like a man. He might have looked. He might not have been uber thrilled. It's so funny to me, this stuff, how it's like, yeah, we all know Kevin Gausman threw at him. Vladdy got hit twice in this game, or once in this game and once the game before. It's obvious, but I guess we have to do that song and dance.
Right, yeah. Because there are suspensions and supplemental discipline that could arise if you are open and honest about it. Anyways, let's build to that. Let's start with the game itself, because I think the beanball stuff is actually the bigger conversation and the more interesting one to come out of the game. I'll start with this. So the Guardians just fell out of the playoff mix, right? Like, so that is, I think, the bar of team that you need to be better than to get into the playoffs, quite factually, because now they're a half game out after losing 2-3 in this series. They're very bad. Like that is, and I know the Blue Jays maybe got them on like a on their bad week, right? Maybe they're never going to look as bad as they did in this series. And they did win one of the three. They committed 8 errors. They looked like an incapable baseball team, especially when you remove Jose Ramirez from the lineup. Well, there's not a lot going on there. It's a great example to me as to why the 3 wildcard system, I guess you could look at it as being good because so many teams are in it. And by the way, only 3 teams in the American League are not within 3.5 games of a playoff spot now. But holy cow. Yeah, that's the bar of team the Blue Jays need to be better than to get into the playoffs. I think they're capable of doing that.
They are. I mean, there's a few other pieces you squint and see, like, yeah, who wouldn't like Stephen Kwan on the ball club? Yeah, but I mean, you understand what this Guardians team is. It is like a lot of teams in baseball when they're playing clean baseball and not making any mistakes and, you know, getting greedy on the base pass in a good way of like taking the extra base when it's available to you. They can appear to be a good baseball team. But when they're making mistakes and throwing it all over the yard and then you're letting people swat a ball over the fence, yeah, you're going to look like this. Like, I think that this is just such a reminder that even the teams in this kind of depth of field that the Blue Jays currently find themselves in and are trying to be a playoff team, and you said this is like a good filter for it, go and look at the high end that the Blue Jays have. Like, look at what Kevin Gausman can give you yesterday. Look at what Vladdy has proven himself capable of. You see what you've got in, you know, the other starting pitchers and Barrios and what Bassett has given you this year. So I think that that's, again, you look at that compared to that Guardians team you just saw, and the mushy middle, it's starting to feel like it's a little mushier than the Blue Jays are.
Yeah, that's an infuriating style of baseball to play. If that were, you know, the Blue Jays, you were watching them throwing the ball all over the yard and throw it to wrong base, and yeah, just the people having balls thrown by them because they're not paying attention.
Oh my God, the nailer one. The nailer one, I was driving around in the car. I picked my kid up from school. Jay's game's on. And he's like, I want to watch this from the beginning. So I cue up the beginning. And it's like, I was just trying to have a fun day with my son. I'm watching Naylor get the ball thrown past his head. And I just go in full coach mode. Like, I could not. It's like, what are you doing? Get your head out of the dirt. Pay attention. And it's like, then we just doing the like, look, one error is bad enough. You don't want to compound the errors. Like, it's just everything. Like, Little League coaches are screaming about that inning. God, look at the ball game you're playing in, Josh. That drove me nuts.
Yeah, Kyle Manzardo with three errors in the same half inning. That's intense. That is two on the same play is wild, wacky stuff. Anyways, yeah, Guardians, I'm
sure. Well, it's not like he plays short and the ball's just like, you know, he's having these incredibly difficult plays. Play first base, like, feel the bunt and make a throw. God, sorry. I don't know why I'm so mad. It was good. Like, I don't know. I'm so mad.
No, it's horrible. Horrible baseball. Yeah, that's not the game we're going to show the aliens when they're like, what is this sport, baseball? That's not, we're not going to.
Well, hold on, though, because the game we might show them might have had a big error in it. Like, I might have shown them when it all fell apart for the Yankees last year.
That's true.
It's like, that was a good baseball game. I got to be honest.
Yeah. Not a bad take. But yeah, Guardians looked horrible in the series. And no more so than yesterday. Only two hits and very many errors. Anyways, so, okay, again, building up to the bigger conversation. Kevin Gausman, the performance in the game, unreal. And it was unreal because he got extra rest. This has been the deal for Kevin Gausman throughout his entire career. He's always been better when given 5 days of rest as opposed to the normal four. This year, actually, that has not been the case with he's actually been better with 4 days rest than five, but he's started more games with 5 days rest. But when he gets six or more, he's been unreal. This is a guy that enjoys getting extra time off. He will pitch on normal rest. He's never going to complain about that, but it's pretty clear when you look at the velocity of the fastball yesterday, Brent, he benefits. And the Blue Jays know that they before Max Scherzer returned, wanted to keep the Eric Lauer and the bullpen day separated by a starter in between. But when Max Scherzer was back, they felt comfortable enough putting those starters back to back so that they could give Kevin Gausman this extra day off. That seems to work. How much should they be trying to force that the rest of the way?
Yeah, I don't think you can hamper four or I guess five other starting pitchers to get the best version of Gausman, but it is absolutely something you have to consider. Like, I think Max Scherzer is a guy that for the next little bit, it's like you got to take his schedule into account, right? Like, whatever makes the most sense for him with this nerve thing that, again, like, we don't seem to know, and we seem to be like we're past some threshold here, but let's wait and see. So I think with him, you don't want to be fast and loose at all. It's like Chris Bassett, I've talked about. He's a guy who I think the more you can pick your spots for Chris Bassett and say, like, I like him in this matchup more than this matchup, I think that's a good thing. Jose Barrios is the machine, right? Like, you get something from him every fifth day. It is remarkable. And this goes to where we have our conversations with, you know, the Alec Manoa names, Adam Macko. Like, if there are more and more bullets to be had in the chamber, and obviously some of those aren't coming till later in the season, I think it's something you absolutely have to consider. consider, especially as the games are not going to have more import, but particular games might have more import. Like if I can set up Kevin Gausman to have the right amount of rest for, I don't know, let's just pick one, like a big series against the Yankees, you might want to be able to do that. Or a team you're fighting with in the wild card race. I think it's absolutely something you have to consider. You just can't, and I don't see why this would do it, but you obviously can't neuter three or four other pitchers to get, you know, a very much better but version of Kevin Gausman, but I don't think it's worth, you know, diminishing returns if that were the case for a couple of other guys.
Yeah. Scherzer's the guy that you're babying because he literally could fall apart at any moment. So whatever he wants. He wants 6 days, he wants 7 days, whatever you got to do to take to the hill and not be on the IL again. But then number two is Kevin Gausman. Because, yeah, as aged as Chris Bassett is, he's been pretty reliable as far as the health is concerned. And Jose Barrios, like you said, you called him the machine, but come on, he's la maquina, okay? He's
Morosi's coming on later today. You can just ask him to say it, man.
Yeah. Anyways, I know Kevin Gausman is trying to get people off the fastball and the splitter with the slider. It stinks, so it's great when he doesn't throw it very much. He only threw 7 in 104 pitches. He knows it stinks, too. That's why he doesn't throw it. This is a fella that needs to throw upper 90s with the fastball and have the devastating splitter. And either guys are swinging over the top of it or they're hitting the top of the ball. 15 whiffs for him. That's the formula. It's no sliders. When Kevin Gausman's throwing lots of sliders, that means bad things are happening. It means, uh-oh, I don't feel confident throwing this fastball anywhere near the strike zone. Please swing at this other off-speed pitch. So, yeah, good sign that he only threw 7 sliders in his 104-pitch arsenal.
Yeah, and it feels like that's just completely tied to fastball effectiveness, right? Like, if the fastball is going to be effective, he doesn't. Why are you messing around with that, right? Because then the way those two pitches, like the fastball, the splitter, kind of tunnel off of one another, that it just sets him up for such success. And he is a guy that has had enough experience in this league, but also has had enough experience with Pete Walker, with Alejandro Kirk, to be able to kind of get him through on, and this is the whole point of the extra days rest thing, on the days where, you know, the fastball isn't its plus-plus self. I think that's what it's going to be about here, is finding the ways for that. And that's why we go back to the 6 days rest thing, because if you're able to give him that and you get the plus-plus fastball, then he can go back to just being a two-pitch guy. And I know we think of bullpen arms that way, but no, Kevin Gausman's made a pretty good Blue Jays career of being a super effective two-pitch pitcher, except for the Twins almost every time. But last time, he was good there. So, I just think that's got to be the recipe for him. And the uptick in velo on the fastball feels like the key to it all. And that's why it goes back to the extra rest thing. Like, it'd be malpractice not to, at the very least, consider it at this point.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to Beanball Wars. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit by yet another fastball in yesterday's game, requiring him to leave the game, but not immediately. And after the game, John Schneider said that Vlad was lobbying to stay into the game, but he couldn't quite squeeze the bat as tightly as he normally did. X-rays are negative. We'll see about the series opener at Fenway Park tonight. But yeah, he was hit in the middle game of the series first. That one, there's no doubt. Obviously, the first time he was hit in the series was unintentional. It's a tie game. Don't want to put him on first base. It starts a rally. Like, no way that was intentional. And I would believe the Guardians if they told me yesterday's was unintentional. I would also be a little bit dubious considering first base was open and you could see a world where Tanner Bibee is like not devastated to hit Vlad in that situation. I would also add that it doesn't matter, okay? That's your best hitter, and he was hit twice with fastballs. And to me, again, I'm caveman, old school. That's my mentality when it comes to this stuff. You hit my best player twice in a 3-game series. Your best player has to also receive a fastball. Okay. And ideally, nobody's hurt, and it's just like, ow. I mean, you're hurt because taking 95 in the ribs, that doesn't, yeah. But ideally, you're not leaving the game because you're incapacitated. But if that's the deal, that's the deal. And Kevin Gausman did it beautifully and perfectly. And sure, would you have preferred it to happen in a game that was it was more lopsided in favor of the Blue Jays? Sure. But whatever. He plunks him on the first pitch in the bottom of the fourth inning. There is no doubt in anyone's mind. The dugouts get warned. Nobody takes to the field. The benches don't clear or anything. You know why? Because everybody accepts, yeah, you know what? That's fair. Your best player got hit twice by fastballs. You threw it right at his hip, and I know Stephen Vogt would come out afterwards and disagree with John Schneider that it wasn't at his hip until you look at the replay, and it was. It's just Jose Ramirez threw his elbow at it for some reason. That was a bad idea. Just wear it. That's what you're supposed to do in that moment. And everybody went about their business. I thought it was handled so perfectly by absolutely everyone, including the Guardians. The not having the benches clear, not having the bullpens clear. And, yeah, Stephen Vogt getting a little upset, but I think afterwards he would realize, you know what, that was, if you're going to plunk someone and we're going to live in that world, and I bet you Stephen Vogt likes living in that world, that's exactly what you should do in that moment. I thought everybody handled it perfectly.
My favorite part about discussing this today, and before I even heard from Schneider, was that I knew that at the very least, me, you, and Schneider would be in lockstep in congratulating the Guardians for having handled them getting hit by a pitch intentionally perfect. And I agree. It's like, good job. That is what you're supposed to do. So I agree with everything you just said. I think Joe Siddall hit the nail on the head on the broadcast when he says, look, they're not trying to hit him, but you throw a sinker inside, first base is open, you hit him. That's not trying not to hit him, okay? That's right. Not what that is. That's so. And some people could say, well, what's the difference between that and pitching inside? It's like, well, I don't know. Let's just do some, like, baseball anatomy. It's like, if it's a two-seamer that's cutting inside, that's a little more dangerous than a pitch that breaks in. Same with a sinker that's going to have a little, like, arm side run and into the batter on it. So I look at these things with it, and you can see it so nakedly there. Okay, I don't even want to play devil's advocate. Well, let me just ask you some questions here, Ben.
Okay, please.
So I agree with you. It has to be Ramirez to eat it, right? Like, even in a world where the National League still exists, it's like, I don't want to make the guy who threw the ball. I want to make it. Okay, well, you can do both. You can make him accountable to his teammates and
yes.
both those things. But let's say Kevin Gausman plunks Ramirez there. And that's the beginning, not of the end of Kevin Gausman. Like, he's not going to vanish from the planet. But it's like, there's the good outing. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you get a little bleeder single. And you got a couple men on and no outs. And the game gets away from you. Like, what is street justice worth to you there? Because I agree. I'm happy I saw it happen.
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering if that is where the Kevin Gausman nails outing that he kind of needed to have goes awry, how much was that worth it to you?
Okay, so for context, it was 3-0. The Blue Jays had scored their 3 runs by that moment in the game, and that led off the inning. But here's the thing about hitting the other team's best player. There's a good chance that, like, Jose Ramirez is getting on base either way because he's very good at baseball, right? And it's just a leadoff base runner. And because Kevin Gausman is so good and because he is so able to compartmentalize, that didn't, like, deter him from being very good. And he got out of that inning totally unscathed. So I understand the point. And it's why a lot of people in my Twitter feed were talking about how I get it. Like, you got to do it, but not there. You got to make sure that it's okay. Maybe some opportunity never arises in the game. And if you're not comfortable enough with one of your best pitchers in a 3-0 game, handing the opposition one free base runner for a guy that's got an on base percentage of like 400 anyways, what are we doing here? So I understand what you're saying. Like, you can't, if it's like a tie game and it's the ninth inning, probably you're going to wait until some other opportunity, or maybe it's going to go by the wayside. I get it. To me, that's the perfect opportunity to hit Jose Ramirez. And again, this is Jose Ramirez. That was not the first batter he faced after the Vlad plunking, right? There was the bottom of the third, and he didn't plunk any of those guys, and he waited until Jose Ramirez was up, because it's not the same. Like, you don't get to hit Kyle Manzardo and it'd be tit for tat, eye for an eye. And I don't know, it leaves everyone blind. That's okay. Everyone can be blind for a bit. No, you have to wait until it's a player of requisite skill, and that's Jose Ramirez. I had no problems with it, but I understand the point, and I understand people pushing back. And if that had been the start of the unraveling and the Blue Jays lose the series and then they miss the playoffs by a single game, you're like, was it worth it? Well, obviously not. But I think you have enough faith in your starting pitcher, one, to know that, okay, I'm going to throw this pitch and then we're going to get warnings and there'll be nothing after that. And everyone will be fine and we'll play baseball after this and that it won't unravel for me. And honestly, like, again, you don't want anybody to get hurt. Like, I do think it's bad that Jose Ramirez left the game, and hopefully he's fine, not a significant injury. Maybe don't put your, like, arm in the way of the baseball. Just let it hit you in the hip. And hopefully Vlad is okay for the start of the series. But, you know, you talk about, like, when Max Domi goes after some skill player and it's both guys are in the box, you're like, good trade. As good trade, especially in a game the Blue Jays are already leading 3-0 to have Jose Ramirez out of the game.
I agree. Couple more points on this. I agree with your answer. I just wanted to hear you articulate it because I know that pushback is coming of like, oh, but if you lose the game, but they didn't. Let's also throw that out there. It's like it didn't happen. Here were the other two chances you were going to have to do it. In the sixth inning, in also a 3-run ball game, so there's less room to make up any mistakes that happen here. And I know the game had got blown open with what they did in the top of nine, but or the ninth inning, do you want to do it there? No, you're not doing it there. So that was the time and place it had to happen. What is the most protection Jose Ramirez could have come out with for that at bat? like he knew it was happening, right? Like, I mean, like, wears the tiniest... Okay, sorry. Let me rephrase that. He knew there was a possibility of it happening. Mm-hmm. Jose Ramirez has been around baseball long enough to know, like, oh, gee, that guy's been hit twice. He seems really mad. They seem to really like him. Maybe, I don't know, just, like, go to the old Shohei Ohtani one. He wears, like, a sleeker elbow protector now, but it's, like, he used to wear one that was, like, basically looked like an arm cast from the middle of his bicep to his wrist. You could do that. It's, like, get all the leg guards you want. It's, like, could you just go out there in catcher's gear? Are there rules against this? That would have been high comedy in a moment that, like, didn't call for it because it's very serious because he had to get his comeuppance. But, I mean, I would have loved to have seen him just, like, hey, boys, what gear do we have? Let's pile it on here.
Yeah, it would have been great if he came out with, like, I don't know, a riot shield or something. Yeah. Like, I mean, he could have assumed. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I did. In the immediate aftermath of Vlad getting hit, I did say Jose Ramirez needed to wear it, so I was on high alert for it. Good on the Blue Jays, and honestly, great on Kevin Gausman. You want to talk about something that endears you to your teammates? No question. You know, Kevin Gausman got a lot of high fives after that game because it was a spectacular outing and he saved the bullpen and it was great and they won a series. But I guarantee you a good percentage of the high fiving and the emotion that went into it was, hey, man, you had our best players back. And honestly, would I be surprised if we look back on this game in that moment as one of the pivotal jumping off points for this team? If, you know, togetherness and team unity means anything in this sport, which you can argue it doesn't. I would say sometimes it does, or maybe correlation is going to equal causation for me. It just felt like a moment for this team.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's something to that. And this is where, you know, the code is different in all sports, but it kind of rhymes. And it's like nobody had to tell Kevin Gausman what to do. Like, this wasn't Mark Crawford going on in the dugout and being like, you know what to do, guys.
I bet you nobody did. Knows.
No, of course he did. Nobody had to say anything to him. It's like, okay, if this is like Trey Yosevich in his first big league outing, it's like maybe someone has a word to, like, shepherd him through this. But no, I think Kevin Gausman, having been around the block a trillion times, being a guy that matters on this team, I think that is actually, like, the best part of it, is that I'd be floored. Not that I'd be, like, a bad sign if somebody said to Gaz, like, hey, make sure he wears it. But it's just like, it doesn't need to be said. Obviously, he was going to take care of it.
Yeah. You know who the last people are that we haven't said great job about but deserve their share of credit are the umpires for the way they handled that as well, right? Like, that there were no prior warnings. Vlad was hit with a pitch that, I think could have easily been deemed unintentional. Again, I don't care. It doesn't matter if it was intentional or not. It was fastball into his forearm on a consecutive day, and he was removed from the game because he couldn't grip a bat strong enough, so whatever. But that warnings weren't issued in that moment. because that inhibits the Blue Jays' ability to hit Jose Ramirez. Because there's no question, if a warning had been issued after Vlad is hit and you hit Jose Ramirez with the first pitch of the fourth inning, you're gone. And then that is an issue, but no warnings had been issued to that point. And they are within their rights. Like, umpires can, if they deem a plunking intentional, without warning, they can eject a pitcher. I mean, we saw this with Noah Syndergaard many years ago, right? First batter of the game, he was ejected without warnings.
Was this when Terry Collins was put in the jackpot? Is that the famous?
No, that was a different one. But yeah, Terry Collins was involved. But yeah, the umpires could have just ejected Kevin Gausman in that moment, because there's no debate that was intentional. And everybody was fine with it. Warnings were issued then to make sure that there was nothing else. Like, we're a scoreboard, 1-1 in the game. Both players had to leave the game. That sucks. Both players were hit. So kudos to the umpires for doing their job spectacularly as well.
No, that's a great point. I honestly hadn't considered. But yeah, we have seen guys kind of screw up the order of operations with this, and then one team feels aggrieved. Honestly, if you want to make sure somebody who's mad stays that way, don't let them do anything about it. Like, I'm not telling you have to let a mad person do anything they want, but it's like, maybe in sports, give them like a teeny tiny outlet. Because if you just want to see the emotions get ratcheted up, like, we've seen this before where it's like, there is clearly there needs to be like a fuse break in this game. And when it doesn't get to happen, that's where you have your things that bleed over for two or three series from now. So no, I thought they handled it really well.
Okay. So what if Vlad has to miss a game or two, or God forbid, go on the IL again? X-rays are negative, so it doesn't seem serious. And he was lobbying to stay into the game. Considering how deep this lineup feels at times, but the bottom of the order does different things than the top of the order. Just like viscerally, Brent, how would you feel if Vlad is out of this Blue Jays lineup?
Yeah, like a little bit of a light has been let out. Like, I don't know how you can look at it either way. He turns on the pitch the other night. You feel like there's not turning a corner, but just a continuing to build on what his season has been. Things are going so well for this Jays team. You're seeing a lot of other guys pick up the slack. But also, if you remove the Vlad remove the Vlad bat from the lineup for even a 2-week spell, what does that do to the pressure that ratchets up on everybody else? So, yeah, no, it is a scary possibility to think about, for sure. And that's wild to say, because I would have thought it'd be a way less scary proposition with what you've got out of Kirk and what you've got out of Springer and the arrival of Barger and yada, yada, yada. But no, he's still the man in that lineup.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to miss a series at Fenway Park. That's my theory. Anyways, when we come back, which of the Toronto franchises seems most impacted by the outside noise? That and more next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So when Murray Boyles got drafted, I don't know if you guys saw this, but that camera caught him and he said a curse word. And he had to explain himself to the Toronto media that he wasn't cursing. Because, you know, people in Toronto are very sensitive. Mm-hmm. Very sensitive to the Toronto folks.
Sensitive, insecure, whatever you want to call it. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. That was Brian Windhorst on ESPN talking about the Toronto market. Now, we're going to, in this segment, have a conversation about the front offices and how they are impacted by the outside noise. But yeah, I think if we're talking about how sensitive the fan bases are of the three major Toronto sports teams in the Leafs, Jays, and Raptors, I think it's fair to say Raptors fans are the most sensitive. Or, again, if you want to call it insecure, you can do that, Brent.
Raptors fans are so sensitive that I have made this joke before. They're like, Blue Jays fans like to have somebody to be mad at all times. Like, it hasn't been a player all that often recently. Like, it's usually just like Atkins, Shapiro, that's where their ire goes. Leaf fans, there's always a whipping boy. We're always driving somebody out of town. Raptors fans find out you don't like a guy and then, almost out of spite, defend that guy. So it's the exact opposite, and that's how insecure they absolutely are. Yes, as a fan base, it is not even close. And I think it's like it is just the order. It's Raptors, it is Jays, and then it's Leafs as far as fan bases go. Because with Jays, there's always it's not to the same extent because the right. Jays are a bigger team. But yeah, there's always the like, oh, can't get a guy to sign, and the Ohtani stuff, and Soto, and you've heard it all.
Well, but you're fomenting the Leafs. Hey, it's the tax thing and the pressure thing and please, you know, we're nice. We'll be nice to you up here. Like, no, are the Leafs not rising the ranking?
I think they're okay. So I think it's very to me personally. I think it is very different to think that the league office as a whole has some type of like vendetta against you than it is to think that like you know, people think you're not a marquee destination. It's actually the opposite. I keep being like, hey, there's stuff that's making this less than the marquee destination it should be, and everybody's going, ah, pipe down, it's great up there. I don't know why no one's signing, but it's great up there. So
yeah,
that's why I think it's different.
Okay, so the reason I was thinking about doing this segment about the sensitivity of the three major sports front offices in Toronto is because yesterday, so we talked about it yesterday. And by the way, the Raptors making their second selection in the draft, Elijah Martin in second round out of Florida. So they get a couple of guys who hang their hat on being hard workers and defense, which is like honestly of all the things that you could prioritize, especially considering where the NBA is going, Brent, like with the Thunder being champions and hey, Nico Harrison, he's on to something. Defense winning championships. Yeah, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world for the Raptors to have too many guys that care and are going to work hard on defense.
No, not at all. I also just like going Mike Singletary. I want winners. The guy picked in the second round last night from Florida. So, yeah, I like that as well.
Yeah. Anyways, no, the reason I'm going to talk about the sensitivity of the front office is because so we talked about the Pelicans' insane trade yesterday for a team that finished with 20 wins to trade away their unprotected first round pick to jump up 10 spots and select Derek Queen yesterday, and not a unique take, but it's kind of the only one you can have. Sure, actually, you know what? Not the only one you can have, but Bill Simmons was one of the many who took the Pelicans to task, calling it one of the worst trades he's seen in the last 5 years, whatever. The Pelicans' official Twitter account quote tweeted a Shams Charania video with Pat McAfee, where he was like, I think it's too early to judge this. And who knows? Derek Queen could be a Hall of Famer and he could win 1,000 championships. And like, yeah, of course that's the case. It doesn't mean that the process is any less insane. Anyways, and I also understand that that's the Pelicans' official Twitter account. And maybe that's just some social media director going off on their own. I do think that there's probably some level of input or a sense that it's probably okay with the organization that you tweet something like that. But yeah, no, the New Orleans Pelicans Twitter account quote tweeted the Shams' reasonable take, and he's not a take Smith. He's just a reporter, right? So here's the quote that they quote tweeted. How can you judge that? What if he ends up being a Hall of Famer? What if he ends up being a perennial All-Star? Then no one is going to be talking about this in 3 years. To me, it's too early to judge if they won or lost. What a spicy take. Anyways, Pelicans quote tweeted that with, this rational take won't get you on a Ringer pod, Shams. So they invoked the name Ringer, obviously, to take a shot at Bill Simmons. But before we move on, Brent, what do you think of these official team accounts? Taking direct shots, talking directly about takes, seeming very defensive about a take.
I want to be clear. I like it when a team account, if they're good, doesn't just tweet like an AI chatbot of the team. Like, I like when there's a little personality. I'm old enough to remember, I want to say it was a Rockets social media intern got fired because they were leading the Mavericks in a series, and he just tweeted out, shh, this will all be over soon with a gun and a horse head emoji. And he got fired for that. Guess what?
I forgot. That's a
good one. That's a great tweet. Okay. That is it a little too much for some, what, the Godfather, like the Godfather gif is better. And I feel like that's like above board and he could have been just fine using that. So I like when teams do this. But the idea to go directly at a media member, it is just so, like, again, it's one thing to have a, like, a battle with another team or you want to, like, you know, get a dig in on a, like, I don't know, let's just pick a hometown guy who wants to leave his team because they're mean to him and you want to get a dig on him later. Yeah, I don't have an issue with any of that stuff. But this is just so thin-skinned and defensive. And you asked of who did this tweet. It doesn't matter who did the tweet, whether it's a manager or somebody higher up, because it's still up. So obviously everybody is okay with whatever transpired there. So no, it's not. It doesn't mean don't have a personality. It doesn't mean try not to be combative. No, I like a combative tweet sometimes, but just don't be so, I don't know, whiny about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems stupid. Also, like, yeah, Sham's job is to break the news. Not to be a take artist, right? No. It doesn't behoove him to have an opinion on the matter. That's Bill Simmons' job. It's our job. It's like to say things, not that we don't believe, but yeah, that are opinions, to espouse the opinions, even if they're incorrect. Guess what? Largely most people's are when it comes to sports, because even the guys that get paid the millions of dollars to be in charge of these franchises are often wrong because nobody knows. Because there's a large part of sports that's random. Anyways, thank you. All right. So clearly, the Pelicans front office sensitive. We could say to the outside noise. So Brent, which of the Toronto franchises seem the most sensitive to the outside noise? Again, this is talking about the front offices and whether it impacts their decision-making and the actual moves they make, or whether they feel the need to respond to such things, who is the number one? Again, we're talking about Leafs, Jays, Raptors. Who is the team that is most sensitive to the outside noise?
I actually think it is the complete opposite order of how we talked about the fan base.
I agree.
I think it is Leafs far and away the most sensitive to outside noise.
100%.
Then the Jays.
Yes.
And then the Raptors. Like,
yes.
I can lay out the... Okay, let me lay out the cases since we're in lockstep here. And you throw in the little spice where I'm missing it, okay? It's the Leafs are in a constant cycle of, is this good enough? Are we tough enough now? Mm-hmm. We paid William Nylander. That's good. No, it's not. Okay. It's basically just doing the meme of like, I'm just GMing to the tune of the knob that people are turning on their seat right now. It's basically what has been happening here. And that was a thing during the last regime too, but this one now is just full blown. Like, all right, what do you people want? Let's do it. GM by consensus.
With the Leafs thing here? Not only is that the case, like Brad Treliving now, I think Nick Nurse actually used to do this too. So it's just like a way they speak type of thing. But he punctuates everything he says, every question he answers with like, right, like, right, like, right, like as if he's like, he wants everyone to be like, right, Brad. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Oh, yes, I did. I did notice that as well. Yeah, Nick Nurse was the king of right. Rowan Barrett, Canada Basketball, he gives us, you know, rights a lot as well. So, yeah, it is. They will do that from time to time. With the Blue Jays, I think they're in the middle because they gave you the Vlad extension, but it was like, all right, fine. Get off my lawn and leave me alone. Like, you guys wanted this years ago. You guys wanted this months ago when the start of the season was here. You guys wanted it then. And guess what? Okay, fine. Here. Okay, fine. Fine. Your native son can have his $500 million and you can all be happy about it. It's kind of the tenor of how that's felt. So I think the Blue Jays are next for that for me. And it's like the Vlad is the biggest, brightest example. I'm sure there are others, but it feels like the Vlad thing is just the perfect example of why they're there for me.
Yep. And dead last, the Raptors is because, you know, they just traded away and it was a great trade and unequivocally a spectacular move to land Kawhi Leonard, but they sent out a franchise icon in DeMar DeRozan, didn't think twice about it. They drafted Jonas Valanciunas after the Andrea Bargnani fiasco, right? Early in the first round. Like, we don't care. They drafted Colin Murray Boyles
after having nothing but rangy forwards that are good defenders but can't shoot. They don't care. They don't care. And kudos to them. They won a championship. But yeah, no, pretty clearly the Raptors, yeah, they hear your complaints and they don't care. They took Scotty Barnes over Jalen Suggs. Yep. They have enough confidence in their own abilities to not care about the outside noise. Another log on the Leafs fire and them being number one, Brent.
Can I just get in on more thing on the Raps and we can go back to the Leafs. How many, I think the answer is at least three, but how many press conferences did Masai Ujiri hold basically being like, look, I'll trade Pascal Siakam when I damn well please. Mm-hmm. Okay. Get off my case. I know you guys want me to trade him. I know the windows were better to get better offers. It's past. It's gone. So now I'm going to do it when I want. And that trade panned out how it panned out.
Yeah. That one, he maybe should have listened to the outside noise a little bit more. Uh-huh. But well, that's the thing. So another log on the Leafs fire is that this is where all the brightest hockey minds in the world reside, right? And some of them are in media, just quite frankly. Like, you can't tell me unequivocally that you take some of the best Leafs reporters, the best hockey reporters in the city, and you just throw them in the general manager's chair that they couldn't have done a better job than Kyle Dubas or Brad Treliving or Brian Burke or any of these guys, honestly. Like, I think there is an element to, oh, yeah, I can say this thing and I can sound very confident and all that. But when I read the criticism and I see the cases outlined, and I also understand this is of all the randomness in all the sports, again, all these millionaire executives think that they are so much smarter than you, and they're really not, because sports are very random, and there's elements that factor in that these executives could have never anticipated. But yeah, when they read a thing that is written and eloquently written and with examples and opinions that are based on like decades of information and watching all the hockey, they're like, oh God, yeah, that's a pretty good point. And yeah, I could easily see that happening. I think the problem that Leafs executives have in this city is there's a lot of good hockey opinions in the city and a lot of people who have lots of bona fides on that sport.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case, right? It's also the thing, and the thing you just said leads into this, it's the thing people are most emboldened to have their opinions on, right? It's like, there are people in this market who, you know, are experts or feel like they can go a little deeper else places, but Leafs is the place where it's like, buddy, and it's not just you and me, go walk into a Tim's, go stand in line at a Costco, wear a Leafs hat, and you're getting a take here or there. And that's like one of the things I love about doing this job. It's one of the things I love about living here, that it all matters so much. But yeah, everybody feels like they know. Now, I suppose I would say the pushback to this, of the Leafs just like doing what the fans want, did they want them to just capitulate to William Nylander on the last contract extension? I'm not asking that in a sarcastic way. I'm genuinely trying to remember, like, where were people at by the time that deal got signed? Because he was so good for the entirety of that season that now, in hindsight, and it's not even that Nylander's been worse, it's just like we're away from the ecstasy of getting him signed and him not going to free agency, that it's all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Treliving got here and just gave everybody everything they want. Matthews got his short deal and Nylander got all the money and Marner could have got it too. Like so I think that's the one place where there is some pushback on that, is that it feels like Treliving has done some of what people want, like your Max Domies and you're getting the Florida Panthers of it all. But when it comes to like the big thing, and I feel like that's kind of the thing we've talked about, is the big guys getting paid. That's been more of a feature than ever since he's arrived.
Yeah, no, I think fan base is fickle. Do you recall some massive pushback to William Nylander earning that deal when he was going to Sweden and he was single-handedly scoring multiple goals and what, beating the Red Wings?
Yeah,
in Sweden
at 1 o'clock on a Friday. Yeah, I remember.
No, I think people were like, well, I mean, it's a lot of money, but kudos to him. He has earned it. You can't possibly let William Nylander go out the door, and I'm not saying again that they should have, but no, I think the harder thing to have done in the market, the less popular thing, the thing that would have gotten him more criticism, would have been to drag it out and play it out, and the season's over and right before July 1st you sign him to an even bigger deal, or God forbid let him walk after that season for Brad Treliving. No, there's no question that would have been the harder thing in the market.
Yep, you're right. Okay, I just wanted to, I was trying to remember if I was having, like, revisionist history, because I do seem to remember people, like you said, just being like,
yeah,
I almost, again, though, it wasn't like, you know, everybody is like singing Kumbaya on the streets. It was begrudged acceptance of the contract that he had earned is almost what it felt like. Like, hey, man, what are you going to do? You can't lose this guy for nothing. Look at the way he's performing. It wasn't, oh, man, what a godsend that Nylander is under contract even. It did kind of feel that way. Like, begrudging acceptance is almost like happily. Can you be happily begrudging something? I don't know. But that is kind of how it felt. People going, eh, God, he's so good. You got to pay him. But I still think there was a, like, I'd like you to dig in a touch more here. People, and again, to your point, the market is fickle. People don't know what they want. They wanted William Nylander on the team, and they wanted to not worry about it, but they also wanted Brad for Living to break him and crush him in a negotiation.
Yeah, I will say, if you were going to push back and say, hey, they don't listen to the prevailing wisdom in the city, you would point to the fact that it took until the final moment and one player deciding he doesn't want the smoke to finally break up the band. Like, how many years has the take been? Okay, finally, if there's one thing that we've learned for sure is that these four fellas making all the money doesn't work together. Nope, back they come. And,
no,
they and part of it were no,
it.
Yeah, part of them were no move clauses or yada, yada, yada. And part of them was like a GM change in the middle of the no move clause or right before it kicked in. But yeah, that Kyle Dubas, say what you will about him listening to the prevailing wisdom in the city and all the takesmiths. That was one he was never gonna upset the apple cart until like the last possible moment, and he was fired.
Or fired himself or set himself on fire or whatever term you would like to use. Yes, that is what happened there. Yeah, the Leafs, and it's odd though, because I don't, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be in the weeds of like Dallas Cowboysdom, right? Like, I don't know that they're listening to the media in the same way, but also the media it's different, right? Like, our media here is a hockey media. Like, yes, there are generalists who speak, but it's not the same as the States, where like Stephen A has an opinion on, you know, the Leafs 2C or whatever it is. Yeah. So I'd love to have the comparison for that. Is like, you know, like I bet there are a lot of Lakers fans who are like, well, why the hell are the Lakers drafting Bronny? Like, I'm sure that happened. And guess what? They still did what they wanted to and drafted him. Like, I'd be curious to know how the Leafs are different in that regard to the other Leafs of their sport. Yankees, Cowboys, Lakers, you know, you name them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so I don't know how you rank the Jays and Leafs. I know we did this before, and I guess I was wrong. But anyways, what I think we can say unequivocally is that the Raptors have been the most successful of the three franchises because, you know, points to banners. And also before that, like building towards something. Okay, is there something to the fact that that is the front office, Brent, that listens least to the outside noise? That they have been the most successful of the last decade, that they have just done their own thing no matter what the impact on the fan base or whatever is written about them. Is there something to, hey, if you listen to the fans, soon you'll be sitting with them?
No, I don't think that is what's at play here. Like, I don't think the Raptors were just doing their own thing and that has been the secret sauce here. But that is the reason why the Raptors cannot be bothered. Again, like, Masai Ujiri had several different press conferences to be like, guys, leave me alone. I brought the title here. I'll trade Pascal Siakam or Fred VanVleet when it makes sense for me on my calendar. So I think that when you are emboldened that way, and it's not just that they've had some success. Like, I actually would word it the other way. They've actually had success. It's like the Leafs. Yeah, they flirted. Oh, they won a playoff round. Oh, how great. And hey, like 15 Blue Jays, all that was fun. But it's like, we're going to talk about this Vlad era. No, it hasn't gone the way they want. The Raptors are the only team that can actually say, hey, leave me alone. My process works, because it has. Everybody else has had like fleeting moments here or there. You could talk yourself into what if it didn't work out, and because that's what happened, and that's why Masai Ujiri. I don't think it is because he didn't listen that he's in that spot. I think it's the opposite. I think he won, and now he was somebody who wasn't the most, you know, beholden to the fans or corporate powers. Like, I don't think his bosses loved him, you know, cussing in MLSC Square, giving a bleep about it to Paul Pierce, right? He's always kind of had that bent to him, and the title just added 1,000% to it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
we didn't mention the Blue Jays. They listened to, well, they told us they listened to the fan base. That's why they didn't sell off all the pieces after 2015. Say, listen, if it was up to us, all these guys would be out of here. They're too old. And smartly, they listened to the fan base because remember they made the playoffs in 2016. I know it wasn't the same as 2015. And remember how they made the American League Championship Series in 2016. I know again, it doesn't feel like it was 2015 because it wasn't, but if they were able to hit Ryan Merritt, maybe they're also like extending that series. Maybe they're making a World Series. So good thing for them that they did listen to the fans in 2016. And good thing that they listened to the fans and the media after the Anthony Bass thing too. Cause like, yeah, that seemed impactful that they were waving goodbye to him minutes after they were like, no, everything's fine.
Yeah. I would say that they did not make the prevailing decision on that one. Pretty safe
Possibly.
To say they were well aware of the outside noise there.
Anyways, good stuff. All right. When we come back, speaking of Mr. Right, Brad Treliving did his pre-draft media availability yesterday. We'll play you some clips from that and react to them next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.